Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to see you.
And on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. And listeners, we're so glad you stay with us.
I'm in stripes today.
Yeah,
Shireen's in polka dots. John's in a nice Miami Dolphins orange.
Syracuse orange.
Syracuse
there
orange.
You go.
Law school's done. Bar exam's done, you know.
Oh, wow. Such a big summer for you.
I survived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I would feel better about Trump's visit to Alaska to meet with Putin if he'd taken a bar exam, because there's a lot of international drama to this.
Yeah.
Seems like a legal background might be helpful.
So what are you saying? What are your concerns?
Oh, my goodness. Where do I start?
Why are we even doing this?
Why are we doing this?
You know, this might be the, you know, the Trump brilliance, or it might just be the, oh, my goodness, what did we just do? And that's yet to show. A hallmark, though, of if it's going to be successful is if Zelensky's involved. I just don't think you can go talk about another country's sovereign land without them at the table.
Shireen? Yeah. Yeah, I very much agree with this. I think, I'm concerned certainly about Trump in basically all circumstances. I think in meetings with Putin, a person who is quite famous for authoritarian government, for killing journalists, for seizing other people's land, I feel like Putin is in a way a muse for many of the things that comes out of Trump's mouth when it's talking about taking Canada, when he's talking about just the way that media is being treated in this administration. There are many very concerning trends. I couldn't agree with you more about the sense of having a meeting with Putin about the future of Ukraine without Ukraine at the table is, I think, should be of concern to everyone.
Especially when Russia was the aggressor.
Exactly.
Yeah. John, how do you see this? And I want you to comment on Alaska. I thought that was a little bit of a stroke of brilliance because it's the United States, but it's very close to Russia. You know, Russia seems so far away, but the Bering Strait's not that far away.
But Sarah Palin could see him from her backyard.
You got it.
It's when we used to have a strong position towards Russia. Anyway.
Yeah. So I think, one, it is possible to have a good arrangement, ceasefire, come out of just the two parties meeting. I don't trust Putin. And what a good ceasefire means is the war ends, Russia goes back to its borders, Crimea goes back to Ukraine. You know, so we're not talking about how do we carve up Ukraine. It is Russia, ceasefire, and you're out. But I think that's, while possible, highly unlikely. And Putin, I don't trust him, as I said. I mean, go back to George W. Bush, who thought he saw into the man's heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hogwash. He has a certain agenda. He's masterful at trying to drive for that agenda. And so what that means is really Ukraine needs to be at the table in terms of these discussions, in terms of any type of activity that comes with some type of settlement and agreement involving Ukraine.
It's going to be interesting to watch, and let's hope for a good outcome. I will say that if you're a foreign service expert, a diplomat, any of the people that work in these sorts of relations country to country, boy, the pressure's on. Because I can imagine staffing this is crazy.
Incredibly difficult.
Well, yeah. And Putin wins the longer he drags this out. And to me, this just looks like more stall tactic.
Yeah.
Interesting. We also have President Trump calling out, John, the National Guard in the D.C., you know, police world. I mean, my goodness.
It's about homelessness issue. And
it's about crime, even though crime is at a 30-year low in Washington, D.C.
It's a tactic to, like, get a public message, feed your base, distract from some of the other things going on.
I think it's also a testing ground, right? I think just like we saw in L.A., this is a testing ground for how this administration and this president will deploy troops on our own ground. And I just have to ask our listeners to really consider how unusual, how just American this is in our general collective experience. This is a very dangerous, slippery slope, and we are fully on it.
John, well, and Shireen and I, agree, but for different reasons. To me, I think we overuse the National Guard. I think we've done it for decades, and it's improper. I mean, if they're there to defend our nation, great. I fully support that, and I recognize they're going to get deployed at some times. But I do not think that every little incident, we should be calling them out to serve other functions, you know, whether it's a police function or some other, you know, the National emergency Guard response.
I mean, this is a really important point. The training that our law enforcement, local law enforcement goes through is fundamentally different. I'm sure you have friends in the National Guard. I do. The kind of training and experience that those individuals bring is not to police our streets, to stop carjackings, which is kind of an incident that spiraled all of this up, I think, in recent times. But the kind of when we think about, you know, a general desire that's largely shared around de-escalation, around public safety, that is not the role, and nor is it the training of the National Guard.
Mm-hmm. I lived there for multiple years. I will say that I never really felt unsafe. And I lived right in the heart of D.C.
Interesting. I mean, my son, he lives in Virginia now, but he used to live in D.C. And I was like, okay, Dad, if you go out this side of my apartment, it's safe, it's fine. Do not go out the back of my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd look out the back window, and it was a much different scenario.
I mean, I had kids with me at the time. We got very comfortable, you know, where we lived. And I'm LDS, and I was in an LDS branch there, and saw a lot of different neighborhoods and families through that branch experience. But it was always very positive for me.
Yeah.
So, hey, okay. I want to just ask you guys a couple philosophical questions. Who might be the heir to the MAGA movement? Think of that for just a minute here. So President Trump has 2 to 3 years left of relevance, and then, you know, the ravages of age are going to take over.
And the third term.
Yeah. I think we're kind of watching some of the ravages of age right now, I'll say. For me, it's Pete Hegseth. I think the willingness to just blatantly lie, I think the bluster.
I do not see my fellow conservatives getting behind him.
Rising up to be president?
I think he's got a certain level of arrogance, of bluster that, for example, I don't think J.D. Vance seems to have. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the same pull with the party, or I guess with the faction. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm going to go with Marco Rubio, but John?
Well, the ones, and this is where J.D. Vance is trying to be the heir apparent to the MAGA movement. I agree. It's partially a forced fit. I think it's the same thing with Marco Rubio. I think he would like to be president, but I don't think he fully fits with the MAGA movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really see a great heir apparent right now. Mm-hmm. And it has been so dominated by Trump that it's hard to come in as number two behind him, you know, when he does his overtures about a third term and other things like that, to see how anybody can truly stand there in his shadow and be viewed as the heir apparent.
Yeah.
Other than maybe Donald Jr.
Well, I was going to say, authoritarians love to do a family thing. So that could be certainly something that we should consider. What do you think?
Oh, I'm in the Rubio camp. I think that MAGA will evolve. I think that it's been a cult of personality, and when that personality's gone, there'll be some different kind of changes. And I think Marco Rubio is incredibly talented and has some great experience and has insights into the MAGA movement through this association with Trump, you know, as Secretary of State. But I also think he's got his own priorities. I think he'd be a marked improvement.
I know that you're a fan.
Of Marco?
Yeah.
I have been. I mean,
I was going to say, what are you thinking now? Because I feel like it's not been good.
I still think he can do better.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Certainly a person whose principles, I would say, are now in question.
Shireen, now on the Democratic side, challengers to Trump. Like, who, I mean, with all of this chaos.
Or who rises up to lead, if you will, the Democratic movement.
Yeah, a lot of bad news for Trump in the last, you know, 6 months.
Yeah.
What, who's going to take the moment?
Yeah. So I think we continue to see a lot of momentum around folks like Bernie and AOC. Mm-hmm. There are a group of congressional members that are in that kind of world as well. I'm a fan of Greg Caesar out of Texas. I think there are some really interesting folks kind of showing up on the national scene, even at the state level, right? Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm really interested in, we've talked about her quite a bit, but Gretchen Whitmer, I think is an incredible leader. I love her focus on, you know, real challenges facing Michiganders. I'm interested in, I think Gavin Newsom certainly making plays. Pete Buttigieg continues to be out there with
I think he'll be a great
a really
VP candidate.
Clear
but
message.
I love the idea of J.D. Vance and him debating.
Yeah.
Cory Booker.
So
John?
Before you go there,
yeah.
I just want to come back. You know, Bernie and the AOC wing of the party, do you really think they can be sufficient to win at the presidential level?
Yeah.
Or is this a small faction that is very outspoken and is overly influential but can't rise to that level of getting enough support across the country?
So I would say these are folks that are speaking to a strain of populism that we saw pull in a bunch of folks under Donald Trump. They were lied to fundamentally, right? But when we're talking about Trump, when we're talking about lowering healthcare costs, people across this state and this country are about to see their healthcare costs soar. When we think about things like draining the swamp, actual rules and regulations around the insider trading and all the ways that our government feels corrupt to everyday people, somebody like Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, AOC have actual plans to address that. I think when you break down the actual policy pieces that people find compelling in the Democratic Party, those folks are the ones championing it. I think a lot of people across this country are pretty tired of a Democratic politics that really kind of just is the same old, same old. People are tired of what's happening in our government.
Well, yeah. And a lot of people are tired of feeling it stacked against them. But I think they're tired because they see problems on both sides of the aisle, you know.
I look for Cory Booker to have a rise. He's the nice guy of the Senate. He ran for president before. It was on sort of a love and unity kind of campaign. He didn't throw enough punches, but I think he'll start doing that. And I'll bet you Cory Booker starts to emerge. What I like about Cory Booker is he can play to the middle so much more than a Gavin Newsom or an AOC or obviously a Bernie and whatnot. And so I look for Booker to make some headway.
What do you see about Matthew McConaughey?
McConaughey. I'm a no.
I don't know.
Hey, a Texas Democrat, you know.
Hollywood kind of Hollywood that way, but yeah.
Kind of Hollywood guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a short break. I've got a lot of good things for the second segment. Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shireen Gourbani. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We'd love to hear from our listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. John, it's municipal election primary week.
It is.
Have you dropped your ballot?
I dropped my ballots Sunday afternoon. Dropped them in the little voting drop box. So,
how many choices did you have on the ballot?
We had choices for city council,
Picked
two of, I think there were seven or eight that were listed. And then we had three for school board. We have a new school district coming in place. So this is electing one school board member from our region for this new school district.
Wow. Okay. I made my choice.
Yes.
I've got a neighbor that's running for city council that I'm excited to support.
Fantastic.
What about you, Shireen?
Well, I didn't receive a ballot. Now, why? Because I'm a voter in Salt Lake City, and Salt Lake City is still moving forward with ranked choice voting. So we will vote just in the general.
So there's instant runoff. You don't need to vote in a primary. You can just do it in the general election.
How many do you rank? Do you rank three? Do you rank five? Do you rank all of them?
Oh, I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to that.
But you rank everyone on the ballot, or just you pick your...
I think you rank everyone.
You can rank up to all of them if you want to.
Yeah, I don't know how many I have. I think I have three in my district. So, yeah. So if you're wondering, if you're seeing information and you're a Salt Lake City voter, you didn't get a ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But for the rest of you, I hope you voted because
that's our
participation
message.
In municipal elections and certainly municipal primaries tends to be incredibly low. I think, unfortunately, we're seeing, you know, lower participation generally across Utah as voters. So it's really important. And really, that is the form of government that is absolutely closest to you, where you can have, I think, the closest relationship and see the most change directly in your community. I just want to add, when I was running for, I'm sure this happened to you too, but when I was running for Congress, I can't tell you the number of times I ended up on somebody's doorstep and they were like, there needs to be a stop sign here. And I was like, okay,
that's funny.
Let's quickly run through, you know, you need to know your local.
All government is local.
Yeah. I've got problems with this teacher. And it's like, have you talked with the principal? Have you talked to the teacher?
The teacher.
Him or herself?
Yeah.
No. Have you talked to the principal? No. Have you talked to, you know,
school board?
Superintendent?
Yeah.
No. School board? No. might I suggest you start in that order and then kind of work through? Because at the legislative level, we don't hire and fire teachers. But yeah, this is one of my complaints. We spend too much time focused on the federal government and not enough time at the municipal level. And this is where it really should matter.
Yeah. John and Shereen, I'm being a little bit gutsy to bring this up, but it's another big week for the economy. We'll get the CPI numbers this week, the Consumer Price Index. The reason it's gutsy is this won't air till Thursday. We're recording on Monday, so we're going to say some things that tomorrow we'll know. But the reason I think it's so interesting is we have a president that got bad news, you know, just over a week ago on the economy with jobs and fired the BLS commissioner. How would you like to be the person in charge of the CPI numbers this week? Because everything we know tells us that it's going to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
So inflation stands at 2.7%. I'm guessing 2.8. See if we're right on that. And if you look at core inflation, so you're taking out energy and food, volatile and whatnot, I think we're going to hit to 3.0.
Yeah. And how do tariffs play into this?
Oh, well, they're huge because the reason we think that inflation has stayed, you know, modest is because people have their inventories that they're drawing down.
Yeah.
But the inventories will be drawn down. And so.
And you got to replenish.
I think that you're going to see a slowing economy with higher prices.
Well, I think that's correct. And I think Trump sometimes pretends like the tariff thing will fix the, you know, U.S. manufacturing problem overnight. And even if it does fix it, this is a multi-year effort.
Yeah.
This is not something that's going to happen in 3, 6 months or even a year.
No, probably not even 4 years.
And I'm just thinking of the career service professionals that are producing these numbers.
They got to keep their jobs?
What it feels like right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What it feels like. Let's also just go ahead.
Can I ask, how is this showing up in Utah? Like, what do we know about how consumers are feeling in Utah?
Oh, a couple of things. So consumer sentiment, something we measure every month here at the Gardner Institute. Consumer sentiment has never recovered from the pandemic. and it's, you know, it's tipping downwards because there's concerns.
Yeah.
One thing, not quite along what you're asking, but I don't know if you saw the announcement about Apple investing $600 million in the U.S. in terms of production.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that's clearly coming to Texas Instruments down there with their expansion of their fab in Lehigh.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's a gift that keeps giving, that plant.
That some of that impact here benefiting Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worked in the governor's office when that plant was announced. Kind of a fun memory to me. Okay. I just got to ask you guys about this. You saw in the last, I don't know, week or so, we've had some pretty big dust storms. And Great Salt Lake got hit with a big wind, and that dust spread all the way to your neighborhood, John, Utah County. That dust has fine particulates that have dangerous metals in them. It's bad for our health.
Yeah.
It's very visible. You can see it. And if you just go to Google Earth and go look at the lake right now.
Yeah.
Look at all of the exposed dust bed. This is a huge human health problem that will ultimately affect our property values. John and I are like, we always buy in on these economic. But I want to hear both of you comment about this because I think this needs more urgency.
I couldn't agree more. I am very disappointed that it does seem like after quite a bit of energy and focus, our legislature really did very little last legislative session on the lake. And I think that the level of urgency is something that they are not meeting the moment.
And,
John,
and
it's
I'm
one thing to be,
with Shereen.
Well, it's one thing to be urgent about the birds, but we're talking about human health.
And I don't see this really as a legislative thing. I mean, they've taken some action, but at the end of the day, this is really about how much water gets to the lake. Okay. And we've got so many dynamics, which is we live in a desert, but we water our lawns and pretend like we don't. And so water doesn't get down to the lake. And at the end of the day, how do you solve this problem? More water in the lake. That is the answer to it. So what are we doing as individuals? What are we doing as municipalities? What are we doing as
industries?
As industries, whatever it might be, that says we are consuming the water and not allowing the water to get to the end of the lake or end of the road, getting into the lake, if you will.
Not disagreeing with you that people do need to be, I think, thoughtful when it comes to their personal water consumption. But there are certainly policy moves that were interesting that the legislature advanced. And I think that there could be a lot more that's done from a policy matter. Because when we think about even the way that we're choosing what kinds of industries we're bringing here, we think about data storage. When we think about, you know, these kind of warehouses for data processing, massive water consumption beyond, I think, what we can really imagine when we think about, you know, decisions that municipalities are making around golf courses. When we're thinking about these large scale decisions that are made, those are systemic. And I do think the legislature has a role, and certainly our leaders have a role in directing our attention in meaningful ways.
A large part, though, of data centers is not the consumption of water, it's the water flowing through. It flows through to cool it, and then it keeps flowing out on its way, whether it's used as, you know, watering our lawns or whatever it might be.
I think it's an important
point. We act like it's just fully consuming water, and it's not. But at the end of the day, and Natalie, you and I have talked about this quite a bit, but what's the biggest thing that I think we can do? Right now, we subsidize the price of our water with property taxes, which causes us to overconsume and not be as price sensitive to what it takes to use and replenish that water. So that's the single policy that I would focus on the most, is to make the market bear the price of water consumption.
Love your point, John. But you started out by saying that you didn't really see a role for the legislature. There's one.
Well, I just don't see a lot. I mean, there's some of these things that are upstream that we don't quite see associated with water.
I'm close enough to the data on this to know that we can actually get on top of this problem, at least right now.
Right now.
The longer we wait, the harder it gets. And we get on top of it by conserving water and making sure that water makes it to the lake.
Yep.
And it's both municipal and industrial and agricultural.
Yeah.
All of us have to be there in this together. And let's link arms as a state. Let's get it done.
What a good idea.
Let's get it done. Shereen, Ty Burrell. Most of our listeners will know Ty Burrell as the kind of fun, dipsy guy on Modern Family and whatnot.
An actor. Yeah.
And
yeah.
As they laughed before we got on air, I had no clue who he was. I've never seen the show, so yeah.
John, you're spending too much time in reading and doing
studying. Yeah.
But Ty married a Utah, I think from Kaysville or something, a Davis High grad, and lives in Park City. Am I getting this about right?
I think they live in the Valley.
Okay, yeah. In the Valley? All right. Owns a couple of businesses, but he's been in popular media saying nice things about our state.
About our state. It's always nice when people have nice things to say about our state. I would just say that I think this is just a nice story about somebody who cares. I remember he got pretty involved, especially during the pandemic, around trying to create support systems for folks in the service industry. Mm-hmm. A person who's very community minded. In passing, met just a couple of times. I think anybody who kind of has a sense of care for community generally loves where they end up. And and it's nice to, you know, hear him say nice things about our state.
Yeah, love it. John, you don't have to comment since he's not someone you've met once or twice at the beer bar or Cotton Bottom, these businesses that he's a part owner of.
I do just have to give a plug for this burger. The Cotton Bottom is a really lovely experience that kind of feels like you could be anywhere. And I know that I'm the only non-LDS person on this podcast, but I'm an imbiber. And it is a place that feels like I just spent some time back in the Midwest. It's very normal to go into like a brewery, for example, and have kids be able to be with you there, get a nice burger, get a nice, you know, a nice glass of beer. And the Cotton Bottom offers this. It's a really interesting kind of location that feels like it could be anywhere in America. And it's a good burger.
Yeah.
That's cool. The Cotton Bottom.
Isn't this about 60th South and East Bench 215?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good burger.
Yeah. John, let's hear you comment on BYU acquiring Senator Hatch's papers. Now, this is a guy that was the lion of the Senate, the Senate pro tem. Means he was the most senior person in the Senate for some time. He saw a little bit of everything. And so his papers have got to be pretty interesting.
I'm waiting for Robert Caro to start writing the history of.
Yeah.
Once he finishes that LBJ.
What does this mean for BYU students?
I'm going to say for most BYU students, it doesn't matter a hill of beans. They're not going to know who Orrin Hatch is. They're not going to care. They're not going to go in and look at the collections. For historians, it's going to mean a lot because they're going to have access to records and other things like that they can go and get a better understanding, whether it's of Orrin Hatch and what he did, or whether it's more of the dynamics of the Senate and U.S. engagement in various activities over multiple decades.
Shereen, I love this when politicians give their papers. Mike Leavitt did this to Southern Utah University.
Yeah.
He's a Cedar City boy, and there's a Leavitt collection there.
Yeah.
And it's digitized, and if ever I want to go, you know, wax fun in my memories, I go onto his collection and look at things.
Yeah. I think this is, I do think there is, I know that you say most BYU students won't benefit from it. Well, I think that's true, but I do think there is something
incredible.
They're
going to be so focused on, is it on the chest next week?
Yeah, there is something incredible about having close access to these really comprehensive capturing documents around particular moments in history. Orrin Hatch, though certainly somebody I never voted for it and wouldn't. Had a long history, though, of being a, I think, part of a really important part of our democratic process, of truly engaged, especially in his earlier years, around working across the aisle.
There you go. That's the guy. You know, a couple of times in my career, I have gone to a special collections at the Salt Lake City Library, at the Marriott Library, where they actually have you put white gloves on.
It's so cool.
It's cool to look at the things. One was with the ski industry. I did a lot of research on the ski industry. Another was in downtown Salt Lake. So I love these kind of special collection things. I think it's neat that we preserve our history. And usually the hardest part of history to preserve is paper.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So closing thoughts
I'm
for our
say the hardest part is electronic. Because right now we're dealing with, okay, how do you save it? How do you archive it? Paper lasts at least for quite a while. Bits go away if you don't save them.
Yeah. A summer greeting from each of you for our listeners, wrapping it up.
Enjoy the beautiful weather.
I'll just say the nights are finally getting a little bit cooler. It's nice.
Yeah, and spend as much time in the outdoors. I hiked Mount Superior this weekend. It was terrific. Hey, wonderful program. John Dugal, Shereen Gourbani, and Natalie Gochner. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.